You're listening to your NBA podcast with Larry O'Brien. Welcome back, Kane. Welcome back. You know, Amanda was asking where my boyfriend was and if we were recording this week. I told her sure. Sure.
Why not?
I also told her that you were dealing with mental illness and potentially a back injury.
Yeah.
Give us an update. How's the back?
Well, technically, I because I'm carrying the weight of my entire city. Also, actually, more accurately, I do have a chest injury. I injured it playing tennis. So I do actually have some type of body injury, including, as you mentioned, some level of depression after the Nets got swept. The only team in the entire playoffs that got swept, which isn't great because the Pelicans won two games against the top seeded team, against the team with the best record in the NBA. They won two games. I mean, granted, they didn't have Devin Booker, but still, like, it's pretty impressive for these guys. That one guy named Sideshow Bob, I think. It's pretty apt nickname. And actually, just talking about that Pels,
he's out of control.
Just talking about the Pels, did you see that Instagram or Facebook video?
No.
Of like them welcoming the Pels back to the building? Like, they were like, all the employees are lined up along the hallway, near the entrance, and they're all clapping as they come for the exit interviews or whatever, cleaning up the locker room. They were all clapping for them, and you know, you see CJ coming in and even Zion coming in, and like he's like giving handshakes to the employees and stuff.
They're like, make more space. Take a step back and make more space for Zion. He's not fitting in. He's hitting people.
Fair enough. But I mean, I really like...
That's beautiful.
You know, like, I have to credit that to Trajan Langdon, the former assistant GM of the Nets. He's I don't trust David Griffin. I don't think David Griffin has that culture in him to implement all this. Neither Gail Benson, you know, old age thinking. I got to think Trajan Langdon, the new GM... bring all this together. And even Zion in the news recently said, I can't sign fast enough in regards to an extension with the Pelicans. I can't sign fast enough. I don't know if it means like signing like here's a plane ticket to get out of New Orleans, or he means like signing a contract extension, but I assume it's the latter, because I think that's pretty good news given like how bad of a regular season they had, and then to, you know, get into the postseason, getting through that play-in tournament and then winning two games against a top-seeded team in the NBA. I think, you know, like it's pretty impressive, I think.
I think our listeners and yourself, you're well aware of my position regarding the Pelicans. But I did not know the story that you're saying about the greeting that they got. And I'm going to check it out after the show. And I have to say, I like that. Mm. That sounds very emotional, and I really appreciate things like that.
And the players were loving it too. I don't think they were expecting it, because when they entered, you know, they're wearing the shades and they had the drink, and then when they came in, they just had a huge smile on their face as they were like, you know, applauded like down the hallway. So I thought that was pretty heartwarming. And it's a feel good story for the Pelicans, 8th seed, you know. They battled hard. There's no shame in losing in that series, I reckon.
We know that it's all about the championship, but you, as a, you know, lifelong Nets fan, you also know that sometimes it's about, you got to find the joy other than just a championship. Otherwise, you're going to have two rings, two finals MVP, and still feel very empty inside. I'm talking about that cupcake over in Brooklyn. But... You gotta find the joy in the everyday, and you know that's a really touching story.
Right.
I'm down on Dave Griffin, but I like that. I like hearing something like that.
It's not Dave Griffin. I think he's hiding. He's hiding somewhere. Gail's like calling, like, "What's happening? What's happening to my team?" And like David Griffin is just like hiding out in some bunker, and then
my banking password doesn't work anymore. I can't sign on to online banking. Did you change anything?
And And then yeah, Trajan had to step in and is like, okay, let me sort this shit out. Let me try to procedure. Let me get an adult in the locker room. Mm. All right. And you know, like I just think things are looking up for the Pelicans, and we haven't really said that much about them for like the last 5 years.
Hold it right there. This is where I have an issue, because I feel like we went through this with the Jazz, and we'll talk about the Jazz a little bit later, but, you know, let's hold on a bit. You know, I can remember a couple of years ago when the Jazz was like the winningest team in the NBA, and now, you know, everyone's talking about whether they're blowing it up. You know, we had the one season where the Suns were playing really well, and then, you know, by the end of the season, they couldn't even make it to the playoffs, although they won all 8 games in the bubble. So what I'm saying is, well, it's to be determined whether this actually continues into next season.
I mean, obviously, it depends on Zion's health as well.
Yes, and you...
Like, greatly depends on Zion's health.
Now, there's been a lot of love on CJ, but if we actually were critical and objective about that series, CJ did not play particularly well in that series, right? And for all we know,
Brandon Ingram stepped up.
For all we know, CJ could be moved in the offseason, so we got to hold back on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. He would get good value for the Pelicans would get good value on CJ, because they traded him at like 75 cents, but now they could trade him for like $1.25, you know.
But I do think what you mentioned about Zion, that's very interesting, right? Because all we've heard this season is, where's Zion? He left the team. He left New Orleans in January. He didn't come back until March.
He wasn't rehabbing with the team doctors. He wasn't, like, you know, reconditioning in New Orleans. He was probably out in God knows where, California, or back home near South Carolina or something.
And now this new information about can't wait to sign the extension. What does that mean? That's very positive on the Pelicans. And it sounds like a shift of strategy on the Zion side as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you trade like a second round pick, or, you know, late first or conditional first to get CJ. And like, a lot of times we think about these things, we think about each of these trades in a vacuum. Like with Paul George, like, you gave up that many picks for Paul George? No, you gave up that many picks for Paul George and Kawhi. Mm. You know? Like, you trading for CJ isn't because you want CJ in your team. And it's like, that's like, you know, an aside almost. Like, CJ isn't going to save your franchise. Or CJ alone won't save your franchise. But CJ coming in, bringing the maturity, bringing the winning culture that he can, you know, help lead the young guys like Jackson Hayes and Brandon Ingram and Jonas Valanciunas as well, like, setting that tone, that makes Zion rethink like where his allegiance lies, as in, like, he kind of rethinks like, okay, maybe there's a chance in New Orleans, like, maybe, like, they actually know what they're doing. And that's like what that trade buys you, you know. It's not just obviously CJ, it's what CJ brings and what it might influence Zion to do with his future. And, like, you know, we also said, like, maybe Zion just signs it 1 year. Or maybe Zion's, like, thinking about his health. Mm. Like, he can't wait to sign the long-term extension because he's now starting to worry what his future is in terms of his health, you know, going forward. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors. And obviously, this is super early in the... It's not even the off-season yet. But these teams that are eliminated are now starting to think, like, you know, what's next? And obviously the Jazz and the Nets are in that boat as well. Like, what's next? And, you know, we can get into it.
Before we go there, Kane, you've been trying to avoid this subject for over a week now. I see in your eyes. I'm talking about your Nets. I'm going to open up the floor for you. How are you feeling? Why are you at your parents' place? Did your wife kick you out? did you go... winners.
I mean after three, yeah, winners only. After 3-0, I was like, I pretty much gave up hope. I mean, I had like maybe 1% optimism that something could happen. I honestly thought if they won even one game, it would open up the floodgates. But the Celtics are just, they were just better. Like, they were just better in every way. And you can talk about the first game when they lost in a buzzer beater. Kevin Durant lost his man, lost Jason Tatum on a layup. That's unforgivable. Like, I know, but this is part of coaching too, because Ume Udoka didn't call the timeout because he trusted his guys to be in the right place and to get that basket. That's that's like ultimate trust, just letting your defense, get the rebound and then letting them transition to offense without a without, you know, calling a timeout. That's amazing. But the Nets side, the Nets didn't have that choice. The Nets would have loved to have a timeout so they could set the defense. But Steve Nash has not given the guys, or, you know, has not coached them or doesn't trust them or whatever, like, because the assignments were just all blown for that last thing. And it just showed, like, coaching was on display. The difference in coaching was on display between, you know, what the Celtics were able to do and what the Nets were able to do. And then once again, game two, they blew a 17 point lead. Like, that shouldn't happen. Like, we're not the Wolves. Like, the Wolves have, we can get into the Wolves later, but the Wolves, like, lose like a 20 point lead because they're young. You know, they have an experienced head coach and they have a very young team. It's kind of like they have a baked in excuse for losing big leads. But the Nets don't have they're a veteran team. They have lots of veterans that they can rely on. They didn't rely on any of them. Blake Griffin can help set the edge. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge can give you some easy points because of his height and his, you know, overall offensive skill.
I'm going to stop you right there. We'll get in a little bit more into the series, but I want to know, stepping back, how are you personally feeling?
Yeah.
Our listeners know we've been floating this idea of 2022. Ever since I've met you, you've talked about 2022, the year that the Nets were going to win the chip. And at the time, 2018, 2017, right, I thought, okay, you're delusional and joking. But as we got closer to 2022, it seemed that we were on that path, on that trajectory to making that happen. We saw last year when, if not for Giannis injuring Kyrie by stepping underneath them, for all we know, the Nets could have won the chip last year. And the way that they were looking, the way that Kevin was playing in the playoffs last year.
That was, yeah.
So how does it feel as a Nets fan, as a lifelong Nets fan, for this to kind of end like this season, and to end it in such a dramatic fashion? Like you said, no other team was swept in the first round.
I've like stopped watching basketball since that day, since they got swept. I just stopped watching. Like, I couldn't handle seeing other teams still in the playoffs with a fighting chance while the Nets just got humiliated, just got embarrassed.
The Raptors down 3-0, getting two games back.
The Raptors. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the fight that you want. And I mean, they have a great head coach. And, you know, all the stuff I was saying previously is just to highlight how inept Steve Nash is as a head coach. Like, I think any basketball observer, even the casual one, would see that this team isn't a cohesive team. And, like, maybe they won't know as a head coach, but yeah, I gotta tell you, like, the head coach is not doing the best job that he can do or they can do to put this team in the right position. And it doesn't matter that you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. If your team isn't cohesive, is not working together as a single unit like the Celtics were, you're not going to beat any of the top teams. And Celtics are a top team, you know? Like, it's unlucky. Like, if we were versing, like, say, the Sixers, or even, you know, say the Mavs or whatever, you know, even like the Grizzlies maybe, we might pull it out. We might pull it out because they're not as experienced as, you know, our players and stuff. But when you're versing a top team, a cohesive team, and Ime Udoka has obviously spent a lot of time with the Spurs system, he knows how to coach, he's had experience as assistant head coach, obviously with the Nets and the Spurs, he's a real one. And he was just coaching circles around Steve Nash. And, you know, it just further highlights to me, and I read this in an article, the arrogance with this Nets organization, that they could just hire a friend in Steve Nash, that Kevin Durant just said, like, oh, you know, we should give Steve Nash a go, even though he had no prior coaching experience. I'm not even talking about, like, assistant, I'm not even, like, a head coach. He's never been a coach, period. Hmm. For him to just get given the top coaching job for one of the top teams, and given an all-star assistant coaching staff with Ime Udoka and Mike D'Antoni, it's pretty ludicrous. And now it's culminated, hopefully, like, it's the end of him. It's end of his tenure as Nets head coach. But ending with a sweep, like, in the first round, yeah, it's just like... And I could keep going. It's just embarrassing, you know, like, because I've been through really bad teams. Like, I've been through a season where they won 12 games with the injured with Jeremy Lin playing like about 12 games that season as well. They only had 12 wins. They had like the weirdest players like Israel Gutierrez and obviously Brook Lopez was in that team as well. I think he might have been injured as well, and I can't even remember all the players, but we had some shocker of a players. And you know what? The next year, we did? Like that year where we won 12 games that season, that was the year after, that's the year that we gave that pick to the Celtics and they drafted Jason Tatum, third overall. I think they had the first overall pick, but then they traded down to get Jason Tatum. Traded down to, what's the guy's name?
Markel Fultz. The
first overall pick. Sixers, Markel Fultz, who can't shoot. So they traded down to get Jason Tatum. And then I think the year later, they drafted Jaylen Brown, once again, Nets draft pick.
Hmm.
And, you know, during this time, it seems really dark because not only are we can't win games, we also was handing over draft picks. But you know what happened? Like at the end of all of that, last year we beat the Celtics 4-1 with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and James Harden. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to me like that was karma because the Celtics were the arrogant organization thinking they couldn't do anything right. And they were treating the players like the veteran players like trash. And they were, on the outs with a coach that was not in touch with the modern basketball. And, you know, they were doing all the wrong things. Like Danny Ainge wasn't treating the players right and setting a great culture. And it seemed like Jason Tatum was a great player, but he wasn't turning to become a superstar quite yet. And now it's all changed. Like now, just in a single year, with the right coach, with the right system, with the right players, Marcus Smart winning Defensive Player of the Year, first guard since Gary Payton. It now seemed like everything is going right for them. And, the Nets, who were in such a dark age, and they turned that dark age into, no draft picks. We've talked about this before lots of times. But they turned that dark ages to flip for D'Angelo Russell, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, all late round draft picks,
Gone.
That year, 2018, that was a magic. You don't look at the subreddit. That's a magical year for Nets fans. They still talk about the 2018 year. And even recently, Damara Carroll, there was like a photo like making fun of the 2022 Nets and saying like how the 2018 Nets won more playoff games than the 2022 Nets.
For me, it feels in some ways that this era is just somehow it's now over. And yet we were just on the cusp.
Yeah, I get that feeling too.
It was like just beginning, and then it's over before it even began.
Mm.
Because like I said...
Yeah. I get that feeling too.
Even last year in the playoffs, the Nets were fucking amazing, okay? I know they lost to Milwaukee, but they were up like 2-0 on Milwaukee, right? On the Bucks. And to think that, okay, Kyrie got injured, James Harden got injured in the playoffs last year, but let's start fresh, a full, healthy offseason for James Harden to rest his quad, which should take, 2 weeks. Okay, cool. We've got an entire offseason for that. Kyrie Irving back healthy again. KD, and now the big three having a full season together, upcoming season together. Let's make this run. This is the start of this era.
Mm. Yeah.
You lose Joe Harris, which, let's be fair, he was an important piece, but it's not critical. Still have James Harden. For then, the vaccination rules for Kyrie to somehow just refuse vaccination, take himself out of the lineup, out of the team, and for the team to first ban him from the team, only to then reverse this decision midway through the season. And then somehow that leads to James Harden being sick and tired of the Nets and then leaving the franchise after he spent weeks and weeks just standing around on the court, attempting two shots, eating himself into mini Zion of the North. And then finally,
this is all fair.
It seems right before the playoffs, everything kind of falls into place once again. And we're talking about, oh my God, have we been like, let's just trust Kyrie, right? Has this guy ever been wrong before? And even after game one, I thought, wow, okay, they lost game one. It was a heartbreaking loss. But the performance that Kyrie gave once again made me look silly. And I said, no more. I can't disrespect this guy's game anymore, okay? This guy has shown me up once too many times now. And I was feeling good about that, right? And they were definitely in game two as well. But like you said, by game three, and after losing game three, it just felt it's too much. Yeah. The mental load was just too much.
Yeah.
Even down 0-2, I still felt good. From feeling good about the team still to now, a week later, getting swept and feeling this is over. It's over. I don't see a path forward for this team anymore.
I feel like
KD probably turned a corner at one point this season where he's still one of the best players, but he's on his like 16th season now. He's like 33 years old. I'm not sure if he could carry this team through four rounds of playoffs. And Ben Simmons, I was huge on Ben Simmons after the trade. But after watching the Raptors, watching Scottie Barnes go down game one after, you know, Embiid tried to bulldoze him, and then seeing Scottie Barnes return game three, game four, even when he wasn't fully ready. But just getting a sense that this is a guy that loves basketball, this is a guy that wants to be in the playoffs, wants to play, versus Ben Simmons, who now there's reports that, you know, his team was saying that he's ready to play just because they wanted to get him out of Philly. But in fact, that he was not really in any shape ready to play, mentally or physically. And now coming out that, you know, he had some back injury. Like, how do you develop back injury after not playing for a year? My takeaway with Ben Simmons is just I feel like this is like maybe they should trade Ben Simmons this summer because this guy is just not really invested in basketball. And can we have another person on this team that's not fully invested in basketball? Am I wrong in this? Am I being a hater here?
Nah, I have that feeling. And like I kind of have that feeling because I'm generally quite pessimistic. But I think that that feeling is generally shared across every, like, it's pretty universal because the Nets for the past, I can't count, but like the maybe last four off seasons have just been going from strength to strength to strength to strength. Like, we're talking about off season one, like,
Kyrie,
whatever, like, you know, we get D'Lo, we get some, no, I'm saying like even before that, like we get some kind of like kind of good names and like you're feeling good about yourself. And then after all that, you know, 2018, the next offseason, you get KD, Kyrie signing on the team. The next offseason after that, you know, you're talking about, you know, after the bubble, I believe. KD is going to play for you this season, you know. And later that offseason, you trade for James Harden. You trade for James Harden midseason. And he looks like a top three player in the NBA when he joins up with KD. The first few games, KD and James Harden, people are thinking, these two are good enough to win the championship just by themselves. You know, they don't need Kyrie. Kyrie is just icing on the cake. And then last offseason, it was like, all right, like you said, all right, you know, we lost. But look, the injuries were the big reason. We lost to the eventual champions, the Bucks. There's no shame in that. It was a 7-game series, the toe on the line sort of situation. Overtime in game 7, like it doesn't get any closer than that. The Bucks, you know, ended up demolishing the Hawks and the Suns. So why couldn't it be the Nets? The way that KD was playing, he was playing all world. And we went to last offseason thinking like, all right, KD is playing all world. Kyrie, you know, is going to recover from his ankle injury. And James Harden is going to recover from his hamstring and quad injury. And we're going to be right. We're going to have a whole season with, you know, second year head coach Steve Nash to get this right. And as you said, nothing went right. Everything that went wrong, could have gone wrong, went wrong. And, you know, I don't want to get into detail. You know, you summed it up pretty nicely. And, you know, it's because of that bad luck. It's because, like you said, Ben Simmons just doesn't seem like he really loves basketball. He just wants to get paid. He just wants to live the lifestyle. Kyrie Irving, he said it in the past. We have quotes of him saying basketball is not the most important thing in his life. And KD, like you said, like KD is 33.
Kyrie also said that he can definitely see himself retiring in his early 30s.
Right, well, he's 30. I think he's turning 30 this year or early next year. And KD, like you said, 33, and who knows how much longer he has as a top five player. Like, you have to be at least top five player to carry a team. And I think KD is still the best you know, people say Jason Tatum's better than him now. I think that is a better, it's a much closer conversation now, considering that the Celtics swept the Nets. But, you know, like, I still think KD is, like, really good, at least top three. But he can't carry a team by himself. He needs players around him. It doesn't help that Ben Simmons, if even half of Ben Simmons returns, that's, like, a really good defensive presence to have. If they even have half of Joe Harris, that's at least a pretty good outside scoring threat to have. Two tall guys, they're both above 6'6", that can help you defend. You don't have to trot out Bruce Brown and Seth Curry and Kyrie Irving and Patty Mills, like, surrounding Kevin Durant. That's, like, the most undersized lineup in the league. They're, like, all 6'2", except for Kevin Durant. It just changes the make. It would change the series, but, you know, it just kind of gives me so little confidence when you hear, you know, when it's like such a calm down. Like, it was so high for so long, and now this is a huge calm down because you really don't know where it's going to go. Kyrie Irving is on his on a play option. He can opt into a play option or sign a 5-year max extension and get paid $50 million by age 37 or something like that. I think any rational fan would say no, like, don't give Kyrie Irving 50 mil because that's, like, you're never going to see that 50 mil again in that fifth year. But it's just like James Harden, like, who else are you going to give that money to? Like, who could you replace Kyrie Irving with that will give you Kyrie Irving production even in year 1, 2, and 3?
You mean availability for 40 games?
Sure, even if it's only available 40 games. What kind of attainable player can you get for those 40 games that is going to match Kyrie's production?
Plus, no food during the month of April. That's playoffs time.
Yeah, sure.
Plus, I think, when sure. is his birthday? I think it's January or February. He usually disappears for like a week or two. I think he also celebrates Chinese New Year. That changes every year. So that's sometime in February, potentially. Or March.
Like, we can have this conversation in the offseason. I mean, you know where I stand. I think it's foolish if you don't sign him to extension. I know
Hanukkah is 7 days. Huge 7 days of Hanukkah. Can we expect Kyrie to be suited?
Worldly, spiritual. He follows every religion. When's our Kwanzaa
again? Look, I told you I'm not going to disrespect Kyrie's game, or maybe even Kyrie anymore. But that's why I'm asking you, right? Because I don't want this coming out of me anymore. I'm okay with the Nets giving him that contract. Now, I've heard that, you know, you better give him that contract, because if you don't, it's not like you can actually use that extra money on something else. I think they're over the cap.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So
yeah.
You need to sign that long
exactly, that's what I mean.
Contract, even if you trade him for...
Sign him or trade him. That's what I'm saying. If you trade in him, you have to trade for someone that can give you a production, like you said, for 40 games. I don't know what that, like, maybe CJ McCollum or something, but even then, I don't think CJ's on Kyrie's level.
The thing is that with Kyrie, it's not about his basketball talent, right? I used to question his basketball talent and his just person. And now I think it's mostly just his person. Is that, you know, these quirks that he has, they're not going away. If anything, they're just getting worse with age.
Getting worse.
I'm going to ask you about his, like, exit interview where... He described his relationship with the Nets as a co-management relationship. And that includes with Kevin, Joe Tsai, the owner, and Sean Marks. End of list. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's the truth.
It's a truth? Are you sure? Does Joe and Sean really want Kyrie in that room? Let's be honest.
I mean, they don't want him in the room, but Kate, this is the thing. Like, this is what happens when you sign off on a superstar. When you sign a superstar, you have to sign off on all the baggage that a superstar brings. And this is why the Pelicans and, you know, other kind of smaller teams like the Suns and stuff, they have to be careful. You have to bring in a superstar that doesn't take over the entire organization. Because yes, you can bring in a guy like LeBron and he takes over the entire organization, and he'll bring you a ring, and maybe that's all fine. But you also have to be willing to, like, expect the other side of when that superstar leaves, what happens to your organization. And usually it's not for the better. It's rare for, like, a team, like, Miami Heat, for example, to come out of it so unscathed, where they're still, you know, they had a little bit of a dip, but generally, like, that dip was only like 2.5 seasons, so they were pretty good, like pretty much straight afterwards. It's rare. So KD is the guy that makes all of the decisions. Basically, he's the one that brought the coach. He's the one that signed up with Kyrie. He's the one that is basically signing off on a lot of these players that he wants to play with, you know?
Well, let's talk about KD. I'm going to ask this tough question. Do we need to move KD?
No. This is
a serious question. This is not a joke. You agreed with me that it feels like the trajectory of this team is going down, that this era is over. So if that's the case, as a fan, as a true Nets fan, would you rather just start over and try to recreate that culture that we had in 2018, right? That was not a championship team, but, you know, we can be proud of that team. It's the Raptors, they're not champion contenders, but I love the Raptors. That's a team I can be proud of, right? Versus the kind of clown show, circus show that's been the Brooklyn Nets. The expectation is so high, but as a fan, all you get is disappointment and frustration. And KD, obviously, I'm not denying that he's still one of the best players. I think he's better than Tatum. And that means his value is very high. Is it possible? Should that be on the table? You know, because with KD, it comes with baggage. You have to get a coach that he likes. You have to get, you know, Kyrie Irving is someone that's somehow, like, tied to the hip to KD. Is that something that Josiah is looking for? Is that what, you know, the franchise want at this point?
I mean, rationally, yes. You have no choice. But even as a fan, I would say I would prefer this over the unknown, because even if you could predict how things would go, and, like, you know, KD declines gracefully, and by age 35 he's, like, you know, top 10 player, which I would take, and Kyrie Irving is, you know, like you said, only plays 40 games a season, but they're, you know, pretty good value to have. I would still prefer that compared to the void of the unknown and basically blowing it up, because, yeah, maybe you can, but you can't. Like, who can you trade? Like, there's no equal to KD, you know? Like, the equal to KD is just like maybe a Jason. Like, oh, because Jason is younger, so yeah, I guess they would be equal trade value. Like, maybe a Jason, or maybe, like, a Giannis. Like, that. Like, that's the level you're playing with if you were trying to get equal value for KD. Otherwise, you have to do, like, a Melo sort of situation where you're trading for a bunch of, good role players, you know, when the Nuggets traded with the Knicks. Like, that sort of situation. But that's obviously much more fraught, because those role players are, and the draft picks, you have no idea what's going to happen. I trust Sean Marks can do the right thing, even if he was presented the option of trading KD. But me as a fan, I'd much rather see the player that is already there, as already, like, a superstar player with another superstar player in Kyrie, and, like, just pray it works. Pray that they're healthy, because their relationship, their chemistry is great. The chemistry is, as in the top two players in your team, they're one of the best in the NBA in terms of chemistry. The handshake is down. The way the intensity and the passion that they play together when they're on the court together is, like, to me, like, so exciting. Like, I don't see, like, other kind of top players have that sort of chemistry. And maybe that doesn't result in a championship, which is fine, because I've never experienced a championship with basketball. So I don't know. So I'm okay with that. But I want to see exciting and fun teams. And that's why I liked it when Vince Carter and Richard Jefferson and Jason Kidd were getting bounced in the second round by the Heat, because they were just fun to watch and they were getting, like, game sixes, you know? Like, I didn't mind that. I was proud of that team, you know? I was proud of those teams, because they're always a top four team.
I like chemistry. I do like the storylines where, you know, the top players on team, they get along with each other. I think that's beautiful.
Because it happens a lot where they're not.
But at some point, you know, that's a cute story. But, you know, this is not the rec league. You know, if you're KD and you want to play with your friends, maybe wait till you're retired, you wait till you're 38 and then go to a team where you can play with your friends. But, you know, if I'm a fan of the team, I kind of want my top player to be a winner first.
Well, they both have been winners. What do you mean?
It's already bitten you. because, you know, this is one of the reasons why it's one of the reasons why Jared Allen isn't on the team anymore, is because they wanted DeAndre Jordan to play, to be on this team. And I think that was one of the reasons that Kenny Atkinson got into trouble, because he wouldn't play DeAndre Jordan. And it turned out, for good reasons. I mean, I like DeAndre. I thought DeAndre should have been playing, but obviously I don't know anything about basketball compared to like Kenny Atkinson, because what has Kenny shown? DeAndre Jordan has not played on any other team that's traded for him. He didn't play on the Lakers. He's not playing on the Clippers. He's basically unplayable, right?
And Sixers.
On the Sixers.
Yeah.
Sorry. And Kenny knew that. Kenny knew that, and Kenny was going to play the players that he could play that can win. That was an issue. Kyrie, KD wanted DeAndre Jordan to start. Not just come off the bench, to start. And therefore, they had to move Jared Allen, because Jared Allen would have been, you know, it would be a wasted asset. They had to trade that asset to get something back.
They traded for James Harden. That's what they did, you know.
Well, they got rid of Jared Allen. They had to get rid of Dinwiddie. They had to get rid of LeVert. So they got rid of, you know, all valuable assets.
But they traded all the future potential for a guy that at that time was an MVP candidate, you know, a top five player in the NBA at that time when they traded for him. And you can say, like, you can say anything now, obviously, retroactively. Obviously, James Harden is not the player he was in Houston. It's pretty clear. Like, we'll see how we can talk about the Heat and Sixers soon without Joel Embiid. But, you know, at the time, you just never know. You can't criticize a trade now, you know, whatever, 9 months later, just because James Harden's bad now. Like, you had no idea that James Harden would turn into this type of player.
I agree with that. You know, if it cost you Jared Allen, it cost you Jared Allen. That's fine. But now that, so we can't go back in time. Yeah,
Jared Allen was 21 years old and huge potential, but you had no idea.
At the time, I thought, you know, I like DJ. I thought he could give you something, right? Okay, so that's fine. We can't go back.
Something, yeah.
But now,
I mean, it's expensive, but yeah,
something. But now we can look forward. Given that we've now had these experiences where we've kind of given a lot more leeway, made these stars more partners in decision-making, and this is the result. Going forward, is this something that Sean Marks or Joe Tsai will be still willing to do? Or do you say, fine, let's keep KD. Like you said, it's too much of a gamble if you trade him to OKC for just, you know, a massive treasure trove of picks, right? But it might be too big of a gamble, so you don't do that. Let's keep KD, but guess what? We're going to sign Kyrie, and then we're going to move him. And I know KD wants Kyrie, but too bad. If you don't like it, KD, then you go find another team. And that's going to be on you. That's going to be on your record, right? As now KD, a reputation of basically can't win anywhere, can't win in OKC, has to go join Golden State. And guess what? That's Steph's team. You can be the best player on a team, but it's not your team. And now that you go to Brooklyn, right? Now it's your team. You're trying to build something. Can't do it. Can't do it because you love your friends too much. And guess what? Your friends aren't into playing basketball, unfortunately. Your friends are Kyrie Irving and Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Michael Beasley, patron saint of our podcast.
They never signed Mike. They also never signed Michael Beasley, to be fair. But I do believe that Sean Marks has some level of autonomy in his decision-making. He is the architect of the Nets turning this around, and I think even KD and Kyrie recognize Sean as, if you will, the main architect of this team. But yes, I when you mentioned that Sean Marks puts his foot down and says now, look, we're going to do things my way now. We've been happy to kowtow to your desires of playing, like, you know, hiring and your friends and doing it your ways, but no, like, we're going to start doing things my way. And look, I think that should be, like, you know, continuing to have KD on the team. I don't agree with Kyrie, but, you know, that's fine. Like, I can see it both ways, given that how massive of contract he probably will sign. But Steve Nash has to go. That's the number one thing. And if KD is saying, like, no, keep Steve Nash, you know, we just need to keep it going. No, like, that is one thing you just cannot, like, you know, just, like, let go. You can't just give in to that one thing, because that's a huge difference. Like, just watching every single game, coaching was such a huge difference.
We said that all season.
Like, the dude didn't know how to call timeouts, even, like, early in the year. Like, he got better at calling timeouts, but he would, like, let, like, a 10... he would let, like, just 10, like, 10 points go and still not call a timeout. And it's because, like I said before, I think it's because he has too much trust in KD and Kyrie to just... or James Harden at that time, to just do the thing. Because when he was a player, when he was MVP player...
Does he know that there's only four quarters? This game does end at one point. Like, you can't... It does. If it takes you, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours to figure this out, it's too late. This is a 48-minute game.
He just... I'm not in his head, but he probably thought, like, oh, I got KD and Kyrie, like, they can score 9 in a bunch. Like, no. Like, those 10 or, like, whatever, 15-2 runs from the other team cost us the games. And he did so often. And, you know, later it was because of his lineup choices. Blake Griffin balled out in game 3. And guess what? Game 4, he didn't play in a single minute until, like, later in the fourth quarter. Like, you don't think it's time to maybe play Blake Griffin when he had a good game in game 3? It just, like...
I don't understand why they didn't play Blake. Throughout the season, I asked you this, right? And you're like, he's over.
Throughout the season, yeah, maybe throughout the season you can... Well, because, like, you know, throughout the season they're just trying different lineups and... You know, maybe to the detriment, they tried too many different lineups. But if you tried this many lineups and you're kind of comfortable with different lineups going forward, why didn't you use different lineups in the playoffs then? Like, why didn't you mix it up to try to, you know, test the other team's, you know, ability? And because you have so many different players at your arsenal, like, maybe just try get LaMarcus Aldridge more sentiments. I mean, just get Blake Griffin playing small, playing power forward, and get Kevin Durant playing small forward or shooting guard even. Like... Or just get KD to play point guard and just play a big lineup, you know? Because you're matching Celtics' big lineup of Daniel Tice and Al Horford. Like, do something different. They just kept doing the same thing, and it drove everyone on the Reddit nuts, I could see. So that's the one thing you can't, like, give into. If KD's like, no, give Steve Nash another chance, no. Like, that's definitely something you just say, like, no, fuck that. Like, Steve, he's gone. He's not a head coach. He can be assistant head coach.
With Andre Drummond, they're just turning the ball over. Like, this guy's trying to, like, you know, go one-on-one from the three-point line.
And Andre Drummond also, he couldn't rebound anymore for some reason in the playoffs. Like, he was being out-physical.
He's fucking tapping it away. Grab the fucking ball.
Al Horford. Al Horford is 35 or 36, and he was, like, more physical than Andre Drummond, who's still only 29.
You insert Blake Griffin, boom, boom. Draws two charges. That's two possessions.
Blake Griffin draws charges. He's not a great rebounder. He's not a great shooter, but he can give you something. Like, the fact that they kept starting Andre Drummond just shows to me that, I don't know, like, he doesn't know how to adapt and make adjustments. That's what elite coaches do. Elite coaches like Nick Nurse and Greg Popovich and Eric Spoelstra constantly tweak the lineup. And look at Duncan Robinson. He was always a star. Now he's barely playing any minutes because Tyler Hero is the guy that's getting all the minutes now. And Duncan Robinson's only getting like a few minutes now.
So we can agree that Nash's got to go. And I think this is doable. I think KD did mention Nash. So it sounds like KD's still okay or up on him. But Kyrie specifically did not mention Nash.
Oh, it was a direct question. They asked him, like, what you thought about Steve Nash, and just gave a direct answer. I mean, obviously, he's probably... I hope he's lying. I guess that's my point. I hope he's lying.
Ooh, KD's lying about Nash.
Well, I mean, what's KD going to do? What's KD going to say, like, oh, no, he sucked. He should get fired. Of course he's going to say something nice, you know.
I thought he was going to say, that decision rests on Kyrie's hands. You got to ask the co-manager.
that decision rests on coach.
Yeah, on coach.
Coach Kyrie.
Coach Kyrie.
Co-coach.
Oh, God. Okay. First he took Kenny Atkinson's job. Then he took the guy in the Pelicans' job. Oh, Kyrie Irving. God bless him.
Anyway, let's move off this. I'm still in the grieving process. So.
Okay.
I'm finally ready to watch the playoffs again. Let's just get to the playoffs.
Okay,
let's see what happens in the offseason, because there's so many directions they can go in.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about next? Do we want to talk about the Sixers or talk about the Utah Jazz?
So let's finish with the eliminated teams there.
Okay, well, we don't have to go through all of them, but let's talk about Utah Jazz. I think this is the biggest disappointment other than the Nets. Of course, we know that Utah for a couple of seasons there were one of the top teams of the NBA. Everyone was showering praise on Donovan Mitchell. I've compared Donovan Mitchell to Dwayne Wade, and I've got to say, Kane, I watched every Utah and Mavs game. Donovan Mitchell is not that guy.
Mm.
I'm not even sure he's like the best scorer on the team. Like, all I saw was Jordan Clarkson. Right.
Oh, Clarkson did win six man. Yeah, I mean, like, this series was quite interesting because I thought this was at least going to seven, and it should have, because Bogdanovich missed a... I know this was like a pressure-packed, like, you know, hit or go home sort of shot, three-point shot at the buzzer, but you got to hit that. You're a professional player. You're wide open. That should be a layup for a professional... Like, a good... he's also a great three-point shooter as well. He shouldn't miss that shot.
That's like a Danny Green situation.
And regardless, like, the Jazz only being able to put up, like, on average, like, 99 points against the Mavs, you know, very defense...
porous.
You know, disabled.
Defense disabled.
Porous defense.
Dinwiddie. Doncic.
They should be able to score better, especially with Doncic. Like, he was out for three games, I believe. And they won two of them without Doncic. I expected the Jazz to put a better effort, you know. Like, the defense is good, though. Like, I think the defense... I didn't watch that much of the series. The defense is legit. And you expect Donovan Mitchell to be the primary scorer and Jordan Clarkson to help out and, you know, Rudy Gobert to get those those easy layups and easy putbacks and stuff. Like, that's good for 10 to 12 points. Like, I think that's pretty good production. But this team's... I guess, like, now they're at this phase where the coach is... potentially going to be fired, you know, former coach of the year. You're talking about, you know, a team that might blow up where Donovan Mitchell's unhappy. He hasn't, like, given a clear indication that he wants to recommit to this team next season. He clearly has, from all the reports, he has a frayed relationship with Rudy Gobert. Look, I think Mitchell's a great... he's young. He's 26 years old, I think.
Young.
So,
this, like, is the other thing I want to ask you.
He's a great player.
I can't believe how old he is. You know, he's older than Ben Simmons.
That's interesting, yeah.
I feel like Ben Simmons has been in the league forever.
By a year, though. They're pretty similar age. Yeah, I think because Donovan Mitchell went to multiple years at college, I assume.
Although, to be fair, he probably played like twice as many games as Ben Simmons. Look.
Yeah. I mean, Donovan Mitchell's also much shorter and, yeah, much less polished than Ben Simmons was coming out of college, too, so... Hence why he wasn't number one overall pick.
While you were hiding under your blanket, crying about your Nets, I watched every single game between Dallas and Utah. And I got to tell you, the Utah Jazz, if we compare to the Pelicans, who are having fun getting celebrated for losing, the Utah Jazz, like, the fucking opposite, okay? Like, this team looked like out there, like, going through the motions. There's no joy at all with this team. Donovan Mitchell looks miserable. He looks like DeMarcus Cousins out there. For some reason, people like to hate Rudy Gobert. I'm not really sure why. I know Rudy says sometimes some dumb things, but I put this on Donovan. Like, to be honest, like, they should always been going to more Rudy Gobert, right? Give him like 10 lobs. He can actually score. Donovan...
Yeah.
First of all, Donovan on defense is like less than zero. You might as well just add another offensive player to the other team when Donovan on the other side of the court. Donovan Mitchell is that bad. And on offense, he wasn't... At some point, I asked you, because I didn't know. I was like, can he shoot? He can't shoot, can he? And he said, he can't shoot. I was like, okay, he can't shoot maybe, because I'm not seeing it. When he doesn't have the ball, he just stands there. He looks like James Harden. Because I was looking at his body language when Clarkson's working and shaking and baking. Donovan, he's not moving. He's not trying to, you know, generate, get the defense moving around. He's just literally standing there in the corner like a spot-up shooter. I guess they could potentially keep Gobert, but both the coach and Donovan's probably out. Donovan, not necessarily because they don't want to keep Donovan. I think they probably prefer to keep build around Donovan. But Donovan, like, the attitude is not there. And there's just too much Knicks talk or New York talk with around Donovan to make me think that he wants to actually commit and stay there.
I mean, I would love him on the Nets, but like you said, he's a defense liability. So it's like there needs to be a mix of players like to help. I mean, if Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons are guarding the wings and Donovan Mitchell is just at the point, then I wouldn't be so worried. But
he's also injury prone.
Yeah, maybe he has taken a step back. Yeah, maybe he has. Yes, I think he is. I think he has taken a step back. And maybe it doesn't help because the coach is on the hours and, you know, maybe Gobert and Mitchell, at least the camps, are chirping at each other, which is not healthy. Because we heard a lot of those whispers from Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid's camp. And I guess it came to light that they were just never were great. I mean, I'm sure they were acquaintances, like buddies at best. But they never hung out outside of basketball, and they were just colleagues, basically.
Which is okay.
They just came to work and tried to work together, which is okay. Like, I don't think they hated each other. Maybe they could have hated each other, because Jimmy Butler also is, like, aligned with certain people too, and the fact that Jimmy Butler kind of called out Ben Simmons is quite enlightening.
Sorry, I have to say, okay. Ben Simmons fucking dressed up like some Sesame Street guy on the Nets bench. That's just like another reason why I don't like this guy. You know, everyone on the bench is like dressed in black. Everyone in the arena is dressed in black because they probably give out the free t-shirts. Everyone's like color-coded properly. And then you have like Ben Simmons fucking dressed in like bright blue and red children's clothes. Not only that, he had fucking sunnies on. He had sunglasses on in the stadium. Like, what's wrong with this guy?
Maybe he's sensitive to light.
Does he have an eye issue now too?
Maybe he has a prescription.
He's got an orbital.
Maybe he's colorblind. Maybe he thought all those clothes were black. He didn't know what he was putting on.
Yeah, he didn't know what he was putting on. Okay. All right, let's move on to second round. The second round, this is where things get a little bit tricky. Let's start with the East, okay? The number one Heat against the Sixers. The caveat here. The spanner in the works here is that we found out recently that Embiid is out indefinitely with an eye injury.
Tough blow. Pascal Siakam, was it? Pascal Siakam was driving and elbowed Joel Embiid in the face.
Yes, and it fractured his orbital bone.
Did he get a tech in the game? I'm not saying like he should get suspended like or fined now, but like, did he get a tech during the game?
I don't think he got a tech.
Incidental contact to the face is usually a tech one.
It might have been a flagrant one.
They look at...
So Doc Rivers was very mad when that happened.
Just wondering. I mean, it doesn't matter.
So they definitely stopped play, and then they reviewed it. But it wasn't like... It was inadvertent, right? He wouldn't...
No, even inadvertent. Any hit to the face, even if it's inadvertent, is a tech one. Flagrant one.
So I think it was a flagrant. He didn't get ejected. And then we found out afterwards a couple of days.
No, you don't get ejected. Yeah. You don't need to. Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. You don't get ejected.
This is in addition to the thumb that the Raptors took off. So, you know, the Sixers, yes, they advanced through a series, but it cost Embiid a thumb and one eye, basically.
I feel like this is like, I feel like there's a biblical verse about that, like some kind of Goliath is versing some kind of dinosaur, and yeah, like they got through, they beat the dinosaur, but the dinosaur also took like a thumb and an eye. It's like some kind of biblical verse in this.
So I don't know how to take this, because
it means a toast.
In addition to the eye, he has a concussion, so that means there's league rules around that. It's not like he can just say I'm ready to play. Like, he has to go through some tests in order to play. It's gonna have to like.
I mean, take
a guess how many fingers he sees. How many fingers are I holding?
The good thing about the indefinite, nine.
No.
The good thing about the indefinite thing is that because there's no like set timeline, we know that indefinite could literally be like 2 days. Usually not, but like it could be 2 days or it could be 2 months. You know, like usually it's longer than you think, but. It could be anything, especially during the playoffs. You never know how things are sped along. And given how important Joe is to the team, I wouldn't be surprised if he returns by game three. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's pretty late, man. Game three? Jesus.
Well, game three, even if they're down 0-2, like, I'm not saying the Sixers win, but I'm saying, like, down 0-2 isn't, like, a death note sort of thing. Like, you're okay down 0-2 because you're going home, especially if you're going home. If you lose 0-2 at home, then, yeah, that's definitely a cause for alarm. But, yeah, other way around, it's okay. I believe that this team is toast, though. If Joel wasn't injured, I think the Sixers would have won. Like, I'll put it that way.
Well, I picked the Heat in six, even with Joel, before I knew Joel was
without injured. Oh, okay.
So
I think six is good. I went five.
You got five games. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to change my pick to the same five games.
No, stop changing it.
Well, this is before I knew he was injured. I can change it now that I know he's injured, right? This is huge.
Just don't change it to copy me. Like some kind of weird strategy where you're copying all my picks so you win.
Okay. First of all, you've only let me to losing results, Kane. You convinced me. I had the Celtics winning. You convinced me this is the Nets year, 2022 championship. I think I fucking swept. And then you convinced me to pick the Wolves. I had the Grizzlies thrashing the Wolves. And you convinced me the Wolves somehow had a chance. The Wolves giving up two 20-point leads in the same game.
Let's be honest. I know. Let's be honest though. Like if they could just get their shit together for a couple more possessions, this would be a 7-game series, right? Come on,
don't get me started with
the Wolves should have been better. I'm disappointed.
They had it. The Wolves should have won.
Better. They had it. Exactly. They should have won in six at least. And the fact that they gave up two 20-point leads in multiple games. And even in the last game, they were up by 10 in the fourth quarter and they lost that game by five.
Unbelievable.
Free throw shooting and shit like that. This team's not ready. And D'Lo, as much as I love him,
he's a piece of shit.
Not playing the fourth quarter means calm down. Him not playing in the fourth quarter to me, it means he's got to get into the gym. He needs to get stronger and he can't be such a defensive liability because this is like year six for him now. Like it's cute when he's doing all this offensive moves and not worrying about defense. But this is like year six now, or year seven. He's got his own signature shoe. God. Like, dude needs to step it up on defense. Anyway, okay.
Okay, so, let's not talk about the Wolves.
All right, Heat Sixers. I got the Heat winning because Joel Embiid's out. That's pretty simple for me. I don't trust the Heat. I think this is the easiest side of the bracket for the East. I think any of these teams will lose to the Bucks or Celtics, and I think that's where we should concentrate our conversation on.
Oh, by the way, let's just add the fact that James Harden playing like crap against the Raptors, okay? Ultimate front runner.
I mean, he's playing crap against the Raptors. Now he's going up against the top defensive team in the league.
It's over. It's over, James Harden. I don't know what's happening with him. He's missing a quad or something. I don't know.
I mean, PJ Tucker is so good that PJ Tucker at 37 years old was guarding Trae Young. He was locking down. PJ Tucker was locking down Trae Young.
You know, in the Raptors, I know you don't. You were still going through your depression phase, but like Raptors were literally.
No, I was watching. Like, that. I was watching
playing off of James Harden, forcing him to shoot, daring him to shoot.
Yeah. They were double teaming Joel in the paint.
This is like a guy that people were like trying to guard from behind or to the side because they didn't know how to guard this guy. Because he can't just like shot, he just like hit every like step back. And now they're literally treating him like Russell Westbrook, daring him to shoot. He's still a great passer, but he doesn't have the three-point shot. And when he drives, he's not even trying to score. He's just using the ball as like a weapon. Using the ball to attack people.
Pegging it off people's bed, like dodgeball. Like,
seriously, it's not basketball moves. Like, what's wrong with this guy?
Like, you know, when he's not, like, before he was like using his elbow and his beard, now he's like, he's just resorted to throwing the basketball, pegging the basketball at people.
Okay, so let's.
The thing I hate most about James Harden is like, he always like complains after he doesn't get a call. Like, he misses the layup.
Right.
And then he just throws his hands up and just like complains to the ref while all nine other people on the court like running to the other side, and James Harden's still complaining to the ref.
So good luck.
That was my biggest.
So good luck, James Harden, when you got like PJ Tucker there just to wear you out for like 7 games. Okay, this is where the rubber meets the road.
Well, 5 games.
Well, actually, going to the Bucks one. I've got the Bucks in 4. So wait, is that first round or second round? Sorry.
You got
looking at the wrong thing.
You got the. I wish we could also talk about the disappointment the Bulls are, but I mean, we can talk about that.
We'll talk about offseason. Lonzo Ball is injured. He's not getting better.
Yeah.
But the Bucks, what you got? Bucks, Celtics.
DeRozan also became. DeRozan also became a pumpkin.
Okay,
so Bucks, Celtics. A real urinal of himself. So I got the Celtics winning 7 games.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, you calm down. I love DeMar. By the way, if there's DeMar urinal cakes, I buy them. I buy them and I eat them.
I'll buy them too. I'll love to piss on them. I got the Celtics winning. over the Bucks because Chris Middleton's out for the entire second round. It's been confirmed his injury. I think it's a hamstring injury he suffered against the Dirty Grayson. He plays for the same team. Yeah, Grayson probably injured Chris Middleton in practice.
We don't know how he got injured. Okay, well, I don't care that they don't have Middleton. I've got the Bucks in 6. I don't believe in the Celtics. I know they swept the Nets. I thought that they looked really good against the Nets, but guess what? I need to see more from the Celtics. Let's see if they can take it to the second round. I'm sorry.
Look, I think Jason Tatum played perfectly because in the past, we were looking at Jason Tatum to be like Paul George in Indiana or like LeBron James in Cleveland. You wanted Jason Tatum to be the hero and to like lift this team up and do everything. Well, because of the defense, because everyone else stepped up, Jason Tatum didn't need to be the hero until the fourth quarter when he was rested and, composed, and he didn't feel the pressure. He just stepped into his bag and just said, just give me the ball. It's fourth quarter time. Like, I'm just going to win this out. And then, and that's why the Nets always got swept. That's why the Nets got swept because every single game, no matter how slight the lead was, Jason Tatum would just shoot a 3 and then put it back up to 5. So Jason Tatum's playing at a different level right now. I think he's a good match for Giannis. I don't think Giannis is going to be marking him anyway. Who do they have? They got Brook. I'm just thinking, who's the lineup for like right now? Brook Lopez, Giannis. Who's on the team? I don't even know.
Drew Holiday.
I want to check.
I mean, who's on the team?
Yeah, but Drew Holiday's not marking. I mean, he's not marking Jason Tatum. I'm just wondering like, who would be marking.
Grayson Allen.
Yeah, maybe. He probably would be starting.
Take him out. Honest, game one. I'm not, actually, I take that back. I take that back.
Go, Allen. Go, Grayson.
Go.
I mean, they got a defensive team, you know, so yeah, Grayson Allen, you're right. But Bobby Portis will probably
Jesus, play a bit. Bobby Portis. Oh my God. They got so many criminals on that team.
I'm not loving the depth of this team behind Giannis. Drew Holiday, I don't trust him as an offensive weapon. And regardless, even if Drew Holiday, even if you wanted Drew Holiday to be your offensive weapon, I doubt he's going to be able to score against Marcus Smart or Derek White like easily. I think that's as good of a backcourt you have. And then you got Brown and Horford and Tatum like on the wings and doing whatever. Like Horford can
show
shoot
me
threes.
More.
So I think it's a 7-game series. So I think it's going to be back and forth because Giannis is great. Giannis is the best player in the series, and you know how much I put weight into the best player in the series. But what I'm saying is I'm thinking Jason Tatum is turning a new stone, and I'm trusting him because he made a fool of KD. KD played horribly. We didn't even talk about that. KD played absolutely horrendous in the first round against Celtics, and Jason Tatum was a far superior player, at least in this year so far, like these playoffs. And for the past like 25 games as well, Jason Tatum's been like one of the best players in the NBA. And I think Jason Tatum, after beating, if they beat the Bucks, I think they're going to win the fight. Like they're going to win the championship.
Oh my God.
Like they've had to beat the Nets and then they beat the Bucks. And I think that's as good of a test. Like they're going to sweep whoever comes out of Heat or the Sixers. And, you know, whether it's the Warriors and Suns, I think that'll be close. But I think the Celtics, if they beat the Bucks at it, so that's why I'm putting a lot of faith that they'll pull it out. They'll win in seven because the Bucks are champions. So I'm going to give them a lot of respect. They are the defending champions. But I think there's too much defensive ability like to throw at Giannis, and it was going to give. I was going to pick the Celtics in six. To be honest.
Oh God, Jesus!
I think I got to give more respect to the Bucks because they're the defending champions.
All right, let's go West. Suns, Mavs. Who you got?
Looks like we got the same. I got six Suns. And
okay,
six.
I agree with you. Suns and six. Actually, why did I pick Suns and six? Can I change this?
Yeah, I'm tossing, but are you going to choose five?
Yeah.
So talk to me, like, why so little faith?
How many? Oh, wait, Luke. I don't know. I don't like, I watch the Mavs. Are the Mavs that good? I don't think they're that good. And I don't like this whole, like, isolation play of Luka Doncic.
But the Suns, well, how about the Suns? Are the Suns that good either? Like, Devin Booker is just coming back from a hamstring injury. Like, that's pretty serious. He has, like, a grade 2 hamstring injury. That's not something you can recover from.
Okay, let's...
Well, according to James Harden, it's not something you can recover in 2 years.
Ever. You can't recover.
By evidence of the James Harden.
Yeah, you literally have that for... you have a lifetime disability, basically.
But apparently, James Harden had, like, the most severe hamstring. He had, like, a hamstring tear.
Joel literally has, like, no thumb. He's missing a thumb. He's got to wear, like, an eye patch. He's got to wear an eye patch and
a broken motorcycle
helmet because he's got a concussion.
Well, he's out. Well, to be fair, James Harden did come back in the playoffs, so like let's not go all like questioning his toughness right now.
Right, right. Okay, I'm gonna stick with my pick. I'm gonna do Suns and six, just like you.
I think Luka is great, and I think Devin Booker is not 100%.
I think the Devin Booker part, that's one that troubles me a little bit. Luka, I don't know. Like, I love watching Luka against the Clippers, but that Utah series, Luka was not that good. And I mean,
he also was coming back from injury as
right,
well.
Right, right.
Let's give him a break.
Okay, maybe that's the case. But I don't know. I felt like the Mavs were much, like, the offense was much more, flowed much better and was much better to watch without Luka. With Luka, he just, like dribbles the fucking ball for, like, 18 seconds and then passes it up. Either shoots or passes it up with, like, 3 seconds left.
Yeah.
Porzingis, number one. Yeah. Okay, well, sorry. All right. Last one.
Yeah.
Warriors, Grizzlies. I got Warriors in five, okay? Warriors in five. Grizzlies, sorry, not ready. Not ready.
Not ready. Very troubling, that series against the Wolves, because if it was any, like, two inexperienced teams going back and forwards and, like, inexperience showed on both sides. Like, the Grizzlies were down by 20. You should never be down by 20 in the playoffs. And
twice.
The fact that they were able to come,
like,
back
the same
shows
game.
how bad the Wolves are at being, like, you know, being also being equally inexperienced. So, against a finely tuned, well-oiled machine, buttery smooth like the Warriors are, I don't have much faith in the Grizzlies to, like, come back from 20-point deficits. Having said that, I can't wait to see Ja Morant put his entire knees on this series. He's going to be flying around and just dunking it and Eurostepping the shit out of it. He Eurosteps from, like, three-point line to three-point line, like, coast to coast. Like, that's how big of his steps are. And it's putting huge stress on his knees. But you know what? I think he's also going to put a lot of stress on the Warriors' defense too.
Ja Morant is great. I think I just don't see the Warriors... If they're leading by 15 points, I don't see them, like, giving it away like that.
Giving it up, no way, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I agree with you, but I just don't want to pick every single, like, I didn't want to agree every single game with you, so I had to pick different. I had to go different. I think I looked at yours and you said Warriors against YMCA, five games, and I was thinking, like...
Can't disagree there.
Yeah, I think it is five, but... I just gotta pick different. And I think the Grizzlies is the one, like, I think they do have some X factor, like, that they can pull out a win, like, an improbable win. And I think they are good enough for a comeback, too. Like, remember, the Clippers came back from, like, 27 against the KD Steph Curry Warriors, you know, in that first round like two seasons ago. Remember? Like, it can happen. And Ja Morant is a much better player than any of those Clippers players were back then. So, you know, I think they're good for one of those and another good one where they just beat the Warriors, like, for whatever reason. So, yeah. Give them two. But the Warriors
are okay, nice. Okay. We're at the end of another show. I am very pleased.
See you in 2 weeks.
That you're back.
Thank you for giving me the space that I needed.
I know you were hurting. I sent you some get well cards, some teddy bears to make you feel better.
Yeah, I saw that. It's very, very sweet.
I hope you can enjoy the second round now that your team is out. But I feel like we've got some really strong matchups and fun games. And I hope that it can bring you some joy.
I'm just gonna sit here thinking about all my lost dreams and hopes.
Lost dreams and hopes. Look, the only thing you should think about is Josiah, poor guy. I mean, Alibaba is going to the shitter. He's losing probably like tens of billions of dollars. He's got like now Kyrie and his management board. Okay, I think it'll be healthy for us to not think about the Nets for a little while. I think in the offseason, there's going to be a lot of different things happening.
No more Nets talk. Let's make a promise. Let's make a promise. No more Nets talk for the rest of the playoffs.
I agree with you. No more Nets talk. I think there's plenty of teams to focus on with lots of interesting storylines. Despite the bleakness of the Nets, I'm going to continue to put my trust in Sean Marks.
But no more Lakers, no more Nets talk. Only focus on the 8 remaining teams and maybe the Bulls. You know, make fun of the Bulls next week as well.
You take it easy on me, okay?
That'll make me feel better about myself.
I'm going to tell you
right there. What was this like early this year? Like, oh, DeMar is going to make the championship.
I don't care what you say. Like, I'm going to say it right now. I love DeMar. I love DeMar. Nothing's going to change that. I don't care. He was loyal to Toronto when we needed
it. What did I say, like, about, like, you know, because, like, they were top and you're like, oh, you know, they're going to get to the finals and stuff.
I did
say
that.
Like, DeMar, trust me, 100%. DeMar is not going past the... I think that's the second round. I think I'm pretty sure that's the second round, but I probably meant first round. I don't think he'll get past the first round.
Look, DeMar did not play well. I have no other comments. I still love him. That's family. That's my family!
Yeah. That was a bleak series. Yeah.
All right, everyone. Stay safe.
Okay.
Stay engaged. Wait, what am I saying? Watch the game. Bucks and six. Bucks and six. All right.
Let's go, Celtics. Let's go.
You calm down. Jesus Christ. Thank you.
Let's go, Celtics.
You don't mean that.
Let's go.
Okay, goodbye. Thank you for listening to Your NBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.